Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Training and Tactics Talk on Radio at Firehouse.com. I'm Douglas Klein, your host, and we would like to thank you for tuning in to Training and Tactics Talk. And we really want to encourage our listeners to contact us if they have a question or a topic suggestion that they would like to hear on the podcast. And again, our mission of Training and Tactics Talk is to ensure the safety of every firefighter with a focus on everyone going home. Our goal with Training and Tactics Talk is to provide quality training and education on how to train and the specific tactics we need to be training on, enhancing the skills of our firefighters and our fire officers on the streets, giving them the best quality training possible. Today on Training and Tactics Talk, we're going to begin looking further into tactics. From our last program, we're going to take a look at jumping from the importance of coordinating engine and truck and rescue functions on the fireground and begin to focus more on specific tactics and how to train on those. Today, we will begin focusing on fire attack and hose line selection, which is really, really important. And again, we thank you for joining in, and let's dive into this topic a little bit and talk about hose line selection for fire attack. A couple of podcasts ago, we talked about the importance of when you pull up on a fire scene, the first line off the truck is going to dictate how well that fire goes. But looking at fire attack, understanding really what we're up against here is important when we start choosing hose lines. And with fire attack, part of what we want to encourage folks to do is to really go back, take a look in your training components of looking at fire behavior and the dynamics of how that relates to building construction. And again, all that's going to tell you a little bit about how you're going to have to select some of your hose lines for functioning. I've heard this controversy, and I keep hearing it more and more, it seems like, over the last month or so with people talking about inch and three-quarter hose lines versus two and a half. Which one's better? Oh, you've got to do, one over the other, in certain situations. Bottom line, in listening to everybody go back and forth, they're not really putting the thought process into this that I really think needs to go into it. Part of what I think we need to look at is whether you choose that inch and three-quarter hose line or the two and a half, we have to look at a couple of pieces that go into that. The first one is how much manpower. How many folks are you putting on the scene initially that's going to be operating on that hose line, and how effectively can they deploy it in the operations and be able to manipulate it in that, grueling environment that we're about to enter into? And grueling necessarily doesn't mean, the heat or the smoke conditions. Let's talk about transversing some of the distances of lathe, manipulation of corners, inside, buildings, up and down hose, deployment up and down the steps, those type of things. When we really begin looking at this, again, choosing it's going to depend on manpower. And the other component that, people keep throwing out is gallons per minute. Over one hose line over the other, but today's, ability to produce the types of technology that we have and the types of tools that we have on a fire scene, we're seeing the ability to deploy, hose lines, which are inch and three quarters, easier to maneuver around, less weight, have a good ability to flow larger volumes of water with the types of nozzles. And nozzle selection is going to be, a very important component to this of, what you have on your rigs. So let's take a look at that in the very get-go here. When we're setting our apparatus up, one of the things that I think we need to think about is what type of tactics do we have to deploy? And when I say deploying the tactics, let's get down to the actual skills or the tasks. If we're going to have to pull a hose line, And we're going to have to routinely advance up or down steps. You know, we've got some issues there. If we're going to have to make some tight corners, there again is issues of how you manipulate a hose line. So we need to look at how we load this, you know, piece of equipment, this hose, onto the apparatus. And, of course, everybody's got their favorite loads, I'm sure. But what we need to do is look at some functionality here. And one of the ones I think about is, you know, back in the day when I was going through the fire academy many years ago, we had a Minuteman lay. And the whole purpose of that lay was to be able to put it on your shoulder, be able to walk off, be able to deploy it as you were walking. So it was easier to get from point A to point B. There was no dragging. It was a deployment off of your shoulder. And we set up 2.5. We set up 1¾. We set up both of these style of attack lines to be able to do that. So that's something to consider. When we're looking at tasks, we need to consider what's going to be the easiest way for us to deploy this with the amount of resources that we have. And most of our companies, especially in the economic times that we're having today, are seeing significantly amounts of reduction. There's a significant amount of reductions. We're significantly reducing crews. We're putting them down to 3-man engine companies. That's becoming very common. You see that every day on the news and across firehouse.com and all these blasts that are going out. And the safety components to go with that. So reality is that's going on. That will probably continue to go on. So we have to learn to work around that. And how we're going to deploy our hose. And again, you know, setting that apparatus up for your ability to deploy hose, you know, in this tactic of, you know, preparing for fire attack is important. And again, I go back to that comment, how the first line comes off that truck is how that fire is going to go. So let's look a little bit here. As we're deploying these hose lines, you know, a lot of times what I see is they'll put a skid load on there and they pull it off, it drops right beside the truck, then they start running and trying to stretch it out. Seen other people do the loop systems and they call them triggers is what I've heard them call. And they'll pull it so far, be able to drop one and continue to pull. Again, you know, you're doing a lot of dragging of hose. Just depends. You know, the Minuteman way where you can put it on your shoulder, the triple layer load, when you pull it out, there's, you know, mostly people will use a 200-foot lay for this and have, you know, 75-foot, you know, in 3 layers, it's accordion so that you can pull it straight into a doorway. So depending on what you're up against as to how you want to load it. And here comes the controversy that will be thrown up. Standardization of apparatus. People say, well, we need to load every single truck the same. So if people rotate around or, you know, in the volunteer setting, you know, if you show up and you're on the 3rd apparatus that's rolling out the door, it's just like the first one that's rolling out the door. Well, maybe if you're responding from one station, that may work. Some, you know, fire departments, you know, that have one station really design their apparatus or respond apparatus specific to jurisdictions of where the first in, you know, area is going to be as to how they set up or what apparatus they choose. You know, my philosophy on this is that maybe we don't need to always have standardization on every truck as far as hose deployments. A prime example of this, you know, really comes to mind, and in doing a strategy and tactics class, you know, not long ago, we began looking at the department I was at, that they had certain areas that had the need to do what we call apartment lays, where you're, you know, have your 150-foot of 1¾-inch hose line. It's automatically attached to a 2.5 or a 3-inch hose line with a gate on it so that you can pull it out and be able to begin functioning in this apartment environment. Basically, it's a high-rise kit to where you pull, you know, your larger hose in for supply because of the distance. And of course, you're going to get into some friction loss. And a lot of your garden style apartments have these longer lays. There are some residential areas that they discussed in this class, and I'm familiar with this in some of the jurisdictions that I've been in, that we had these long driveways that you couldn't get an apparatus down. So you're going to have to deploy some type of system, which is almost like, you know, a on-the-ground standpipe, if you will, to be able to begin your operations. So again, setting the apparatus up, I think, is going to be critical here. And we need to get out of the box on thinking of this, oh, we've got to have every single thing alike so people can remember it. Well, I think that we need to, you know, especially in departments that have multiple stations, need to look at that jurisdiction and what's going to be the best suited for the operations. Let's become a little more specific in our operations and instead of being so bland or generic. And I think that's part of our problem when we come down to hose line operations and fire attack is that we've kind of gotten into one mode. One key will fit all doors. And we know that that's not necessarily the case. And we see this. So I've kind of beat setting up your apparatus a little bit, but I think it's really, really critical here that when we look at hose line deployments for fire attack, as part of your tactics, you know, of being able to, you know, go into an extinguishment mode or to protect exposures, you know, how are you set up? Another piece that people are looking at, and we keep talking about this, you know, over and over and over again with various people that I come to, is this 2.5-inch and 3/4 battle. One says, oh, you got to pull the 2.5 for volume. You know, the other one says, you can get volume out of the 1.75, and it's, you know, maneuverability is the key here. Well, let's just kind of break it down. Part of where we've lost the science of fire attack is that we become, again, very generic, and we like to pull one line. And then when we want little key cards or little thought processes that just pop up, and it's an automatic. You know, if we have this, this is what we do. Well, in a sense, that's kind of what we do, but you can't have two pictures, and that's all that works. I think we need to get into some more deeper dynamic thought process when it comes down to fire operations. We need to be looking at, again, the resources that we have on our apparatus, how to set it up, but again, the volume that's going to be required and a water flow that's going to overcome the BTUs in that fire building. And how many of these hose lines are we going to have to put into play to do it? And the way that I relate this concept to people is that if we have a big box, and I'll do this scenario a lot of times in strategy and tactics to have people, you know, look at, okay, you know, what's your fire flow? Have them do a fire flow of a particular size building. And let's say they throw out that it's, you know, 1,300 gallons a minute that's required for them to flow on this building if it's fully involved. Well, I said, okay, let's go 25% involvement. So if we cut that in half and then cut it again in half, which is basically a fourth of the fire flow, you know, we're really looking at basically about 300 gallons a minute. Well, in deployment of that, yeah, 2.5, you can flow 300 gallons a minute, choose a smoothbore nozzle, 2-inch tip, jack the pressure up a little bit, and you've got it. You can also take 1.75 hose lines with some of our design nozzles today, and the one that sticks out in my head is scenarios that the way apparatus were set up when I was an engine company officer with the L-Card SM20, SM30 nozzles. One would flow basically 200 gallons a minute. The other one would flow maximum about 300 gallons a minute. You just had to, you know, with an automatic nozzle, increase the pressure. So there was some thought process there of how we began to attack. But, you know, many people get into this routine of just pulling certain lines with these fixed amounts in their head. You know, a lot depends on the actual nozzle. Is it a selective flow nozzle where you can change from the 125 gallons a minute to the 250 gallons a minute on a fog nozzle? Is it one of the breakaway nozzles that you could take and, like the Task Force tip Thunderheads, where you take the fog component off and you can put, you know, the different tip sizes, you know, in the grip and it becomes a smoothbore. It's already automatically in there. And I can think as a fire chief setting up apparatus for the versatility of being able to do both operations. being able to, you know, go with a fog pattern if you needed it, or being able to go with a smooth bore if it was needed, you know, for volume with going with a 15/16 tip. You know, so the thought process does need to go into here when we're setting things up. So how do we train people to get them, again, in this thought process and decide? Well, I think the decision part of how we operate tactically is definitely wrapped around how we train people. And instead of making them robots to where we automatically pull these hose lines or we pull these hose lines, I think what we have got to do is instill some, you know, bigger picture items in their mind and their thought process to look at, okay, why are we pulling this? Let's look at all the components that fit in to this fire attack operation, our personnel, the distance that we have to stretch. Because if you start stretching 1¾ inches a long distance, and let's say, you know, you got a 350-foot, 400-foot hose stretch, well, you're really having, if you want to flow 300 gallons a minute, run your pump pressures astronomically high. That's probably not the best case scenario. Maybe we do need to choose an alternative setup to where we deploy a 2.5 or a 3-inch hose line and then gate it off. Or maybe it's to the point we need to use a 2.5 and use whatever style of nozzle that's required. So I think the thought process here is we need to look at a couple of segments. One, again, your personnel. Two, what are we trying to accomplish? How big is the fire? And we have to be able to do these fire flow formulas on scenes. And I hear routinely in the classrooms as I go and do strategy and tactics and we do operations and, you know, we talk about fire attack and we talk about big box operations or, you know, high-rise operations, whatever the class may be, of people going, well, who really uses the length times width divided by 3 formula on a fire ground? Nobody does that. Well, maybe that's part of our issue. Maybe we need to get back to some of these basics, the basics of why you're doing certain things. When you pull up, to do length times width divided by 3 is not really that hard. It's not a lot of numbers to do functions. An officer should be able to do this relatively easy and begin making some decision thought process here is, you know, having quantifiable reasons why we're doing what we're doing. Again, we can always put this stuff into pre-planning so that, you know, it's already done for you. And as you're riding, you know, to the call or arriving on scene at the call, you can do a quick glance at your pre-plan and have a pretty good idea of, you know, 25% involvement, 50%, 75%, 100% involvement. You know, what type of water flow are we going to, you know, have to have? I think, again, when we get to this thought process, I mentioned building construction and fire behavior as to what type of nozzle do we really want to pull and have on that line. You know, I like the ability to have a couple of choices. And these, you know, breakaway nozzles or combination nozzles, you know, are a thought process, a way to go. And I've got friends that would argue that, well, you can do the majority of the things that you want to do with a fog nozzle as you can with a smooth bore. Well, you know, one of the things that I want to challenge our listeners to do here is when you begin doing some of your training, and especially if you have the opportunity to do, you know, a live fire training exercise, is to utilize both nozzles to see exactly what their capabilities are. You know, in the fire service, I think we've come basically a 360-degree circle from utilizing smooth-bore nozzles early on in the fire service to going to Lloyd Lehman and the ability to use fog patterns and his, you know, major presentation at FDIC with the tiny drops of water, you know, that he presented, back to where we need to have multiple tools in our toolbox. But I think that we need to begin looking at exactly what we have and having more knowledge. And I think that's where we're missing. We're trying to do a lot of classroom training, which is great, and I really believe we need that, which is the theory component, but I also think that we need to go out and have our practical components to where we can put practical and theory into application, which gives us the true effective level of learning where we can take various scenarios and make these decisions. I think that's important as well. So when we're looking at water flow, one of the things that we need to also consider in here is some nozzle reaction and how much work these people are going to have to be doing while they're flowing lines. And oftentimes have seen on fire grounds, and you'll watch in some of your periodics that come out, your periodical journals, and even on some of the videos that you may see on YouTube, is people are operating hose streams and nozzles, and they don't have, you know, a full open nozzle. They're gating it back, and that tells me that they're fighting against some nozzle pressure or the reaction force of that nozzle pressure. So we need to look at this. And that brings up a whole different topic, you know, the reaction force. If you begin looking at, you know, some of the pieces of, you know, which one has less, you know, obviously we're looking at less force on a smoothbore doing that type of deployment. You know, how long do you have to operate, you know, in an environment? You know, what type of flows do you have? That's going to impact it. So there's a little more thought process here that I think we need to really, you know, look into a lot more than what we normally do. So, again, we've talked, you know, right off the bat about the importance of how it comes off the truck, how we set our hose lines and our fire streams up, you know, for fire attack on the truck itself, you know, on this engine. And then how we deploy it. How many people do we have? You know, do we try to do certain things? You know, the one that really gets me is a lot of people talk about using a 2.5 and doing dry lays and getting it in position and then begin operating, and you don't have to do as much, you know, manipulation. Well, I agree. There are times that you can do some, you know, dry lays into buildings and get into position, and you've got very little manipulation of the hose line. I think that's going to take some, you know, pretty good knowledge of the layout of the building and what you're up against in the specific areas that you're working and your capabilities, and how confident you are in your people and their ability to be able to read, you know, the smoke, be able to read, you know, the fire progression, the interior signs of, you know, what the fire is doing, basically the fire behavior and reading the building and being able to predict what's going to occur during the time period when you're trying to stretch lines. I don't disagree with that at all. I think that, you know, what we come down to is the ability to be trained. So that's super, super important to me. Well, I tell you what we need to do at this point in time. We're about halfway through where we normally get to. It's time for us to take a break. We'll be back with more Training and Tactics Talk on radio at firehouse.com in just a minute.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Well, welcome back to Training and Tactics Talk on radio at firehouse.com. I'm Douglas Klein, your host. We thank you for tuning in this month as we're focusing in on the importance of the specific tactics and how to train on them. If you last month tuned in, we had the importance of coordinating all these efforts between engine, truck, and rescue functions on the fire ground. Well, we're breaking it down a little more into the specifics of the particular tasks and tactics that we need to accomplish. And we've talked about hose line setups and hose line deployments in the first half. We've kind of threw the controversy out a little bit about, you know, using a fog versus a smooth. I think they're all tools in the toolbox, and that's what we need to look at them as, is that we've got a lot of different tools, and we need to understand when we want to utilize those tools for the best end result. In the second half of our show here, we want to look at how do we train on these specific tasks and tactics to become proficient. And that's really important. I think one of the key issues we have in the fire service is getting back to the basics on our fire ground training. I know that we deal nonstop in the fire service with all the issues we got to train on. There's fire training, there's EMS training, there's hazmat training, there's OSHA training, there's technical rescue training, there's medical training. There's all these different facets that we have to fit into training. But I think we've got to get back to some of our core performances here. Fires are definitely down. We don't have near as many fire responses as we used to, especially working fires. So that means that our skills are not as sharp as what they generally would be if you were running a lot of these. So I think we got to get back to the training component of back to the basics, being able to do the fire things that we really should be able to do at a very high proficient level. So talking about hose line deployments and the utilization of a nozzle or the appliances that go with these hose lines, how do we train on them? Well, one of the facets I think that you really need to look at is how proficient are your people, and by saying how proficient are they, how well do they do when you have an operation? Where are your weaknesses? And again, this is really doing a gap analysis, and what we want you to do is look where you've been, look where you're at now, look where you should be. You know, if your people can't deploy hose lines and do it, you know, fluently, well, then we've got a gap there. They should be fluent. You're telling me maybe they're not fluent. So, you know, what do we have to do to get them across this gap is the training we need to do. And then we need to be looking at what's going to change. It may be that we only have one- and two-story family dwellings, and they're beginning to build this huge neighborhood that's going to be a community within a community concept to where we're going to have businesses. We're going to have multiple floors of apartments. We can have 3- and 4-story residents, you know, as they build these larger homes in this district. We could be faced with that. A lot of folks have maybe not advanced hose to the 4th floor. They've never had to. So maybe we need to look at how we train them. One of the facets that I really think that we need to look at here is we got to have some theory, but this is at the time period when it becomes hands-on. It needs to be put into all the scenarios that you could potentially get. You need to create those. Now, how do you go about creating the scenarios that you could come up against in your districts or your response areas? Well, one is if you have a training facility, that training facility may be set up for you to be able to deploy hose lines based upon your district. In other words, if you've got a tower, there's probably multiple floors of steps. So, you know, working and manipulating up those steps, you can create, you know, a scenario and where you stop an engine company from, you know, getting close to the building, and then they have to deploy what would be like a garden apartment lay, where they've got to lay a long distance or a long driveway. And again, I think a lot of this is just some creative juices that have to flow, you know, from company officers who are the true trainers of the fire service, from your training division and your training people coming up with these. Another aspect that we can do on these training is that a lot of folks will get an opportunity at a building to, say, conduct a live fire training exercise. And one of the first things people want to do is, oh, let's go have, you know, a live burn. Let's go burn it. Well, why don't we slow up just a little bit and take a look? Maybe this is one of those older homes that has some very narrow stairwells in them. It may be that you got maybe a 3-story old farmhouse that you can get, you know, in and actually deploy hose lines to where you have to go. Maybe you create a scenario where you go up one stairwell, because a lot of these will have multiple stairwells in them, go up one stairwell, go all the way across the floor, go up another one, and all the way across. And this, again, just comes down to just pure basic hose handling. All you're doing is creating a scenario. These are easy things to do. I mean, you can set these up with just basically a 2-story. If you've got 2 stairwells, or even if you don't have 2 stairwells, you can go up and, you know, have them manipulate around some obstacles that you can create. A lot of what happens is we look for easy ways out. And, you know, I hear this quite frequently on some of the training drills that I go to conducting training, and I won't let it occur. if, you know, our scenario dictates that four lines come off of that apparatus, then four lines need to come off that apparatus. If, you know, the scenario is it's on the third floor, well, we don't simulate, well, we're just going to the second floor when we have a third floor. We run the full gamut of what we need to do. And I think back to a time period where our ability to move hose in a department that I was in working as a shift training officer existed. And we had some issues on fires, and we identified those through our post-incident analysis and our critiques. And when we would have, you know, those training sessions is really what they are, we identified some of our weaknesses or some of our gaps. And with that, we began to set up training. And I can remember running one drill in our burn facility to where we had to go in and manipulate hose lines and move them up and downstairs. And lo and behold, we were running all these drills, and we ran every company through that day of this one simple drill under, you know, smoke conditions, a very small fire on the second floor, nothing really elaborate in the training setup, nothing, you know, spectacular or that would just, you know, wow you. It was just a good, hardcore basic skills function that we ran. And lo and behold, that night we had basically the same scenario on an apartment fire. It was a townhome basically. And, you know, the crews went in and everything flowed just like clockwork. And again, of course, it was practice that day, but I think it comes back to, you know, keeping our skills sharp. So that's one of the ways you can create some of your scenarios. Let's say that you're limited. A lot of our rural departments are very limited on the ability to have training facilities. And even some of our larger departments sometimes struggle to get the exact types of training facilities that they need, you know, on campus to meet what's out there on the streets. So what we end up having to do is focus in on how do we train these. And I know that frequently departments, and we do it here in High Point, is we're out in the community and we're able to secure facilities, you know, that exist, warehouses. I can remember running high-rise drills in a facility that they had built a newer facility, and this one was not in use at the current time, that had multiple floors, and we ran drills in those. And we just used, you know, theatrical smoke, the Roscoe smoke, and we began doing all of our operations. But those are the things that we really need to focus on, is making it as realistic to as what exists in your community. And I think we need to break this down even a little further than just the training division maybe setting some of this up, is that company officers need to take that true interest in their crews. And being the true trainers of the fire service, they have to be able to do this gap analysis with their people and understand that, you know, their personnel that are riding with them, you know, what's their strengths, what's their weaknesses when it comes to this particular task, and being able to get everyone up to what would be an acceptable departmental or a national standard level on how we'll be able to function, you know, in that particular training. You know, again, looking at this training, it all comes back to, you know, what our main objective is here, is that we have to do fire attack. If we're going to put fires out, we've got to do fire attack. And how well can we typically do our jobs is going to depend on, you know, our ability to move hose, because we use water predominantly as the suppression agent. And manipulating hose lines has always been an issue, and it comes up quite frequently in a lot of the critiques. And if you talk to most folks across the United States in the fire service, they always say, yeah, we have some issues. You know, the hose line got, you know, tangled up, or it was hung up on a door, got hung up around a corner, it was hung up on the bushes outside. You know, we didn't have enough people to be able to help advance the hose line. You listen to radio traffic, you know, from fire scenes, you hear, I need some, you know, help manipulating the hose, I need somebody at the door to push hose. You hear these comments. So what that tells me is, you know, we're not manipulating hose lines very well. And that's going to affect our ability to do fire attack. The slower we are getting to where the fire is, and this becomes a training issue, your proficiency, your speed, you know, your capabilities, the faster we get to where the fire is at and can begin doing suppression tactics, the faster that, you know, we're going to get ahead of this fire. But I also think it comes back into training, like I said, the ability, you know, of officers and firefighters to recognize, you know, how much volume of the suppressant agent of water that we typically use, how much do we have to have of this? And am I selecting the appropriate hose line, the appropriate appliance or nozzle? Am I selecting the appropriate hose lay? All this comes back to that, and I think that's really critical here. You know, I encourage each and every one of you, especially my officers that may be listening out there, to really get out and begin doing a lot of this hands-on training and this manipulation of hose lines. I think that you will find that it is going to be the key in more successful operations, easier fire attacks, more fluent fire attacks. And again, you know, understanding that fire growth and propagation is going to continue unless we put some type of suppression agent on it, or there's some, you know, factor that's going to prevent it from growth, that, you know, our ability to do our jobs and get the hose lines there and actually flow water for fire attack is going to be important. And of course, I could sit here and talk about, you know, the different types of fire attack, you know, utilization of indirect, direct, combination, all that. I think that, you know, that has to go into this, but I think the bigger part is we got to get there before we can do that. We got to be able to manipulate the hose lines into that facet and begin to really understand, you know, as you're manipulating this hose line, what's going to change in the fire conditions by the time you get there. And choosing that hose line is going to depend on what is, you need to be thinking, what's it going to be, what's the fire conditions going to be when I get there. Because again, if it takes you a while to, you know, deploy your hose line, then maybe you've chosen the wrong hose line. Maybe you need to look at, you know, different deployment options. These are all pieces that fall into this, you know, component that I think that we need to begin looking at with the specific tactics that go with engine company operations. And again, we know the fire is going to go as the first line typically comes off the apparatus. And, you know, our truck folks are going to fall in and begin, you know, helping with, you know, as much of the conditions as they can with ventilation. You know, we've got priorities with search and rescue. And all these, even with rescue or in search, sometimes we got to deploy this line. So we've got to think about, you know, how well can we do this? Again, I hope this is helping you out, and, you know, this topic of getting back to the basics and some of our tactics. I promised you earlier on in the year that we would get to this and begin breaking some of these functions down, and that's where we're at. It's important that we coordinate all of our activities between engine, truck, and rescue functions on the fire ground. But again, each one of the tactics and the tasks that these companies deploy is going to make the successful fire ground operation that's needed. And the coordination of an ability to work together and efficiency as a company, that efficiency level needs to be there, because that means that our fire ground operations are going to go much, much better, and it's going to be safer. And again, our ultimate goal is for everyone to go home. Well, we thank you for tuning in to Training and Tactics Talk on radio at firehouse.com. We do want to encourage you, if you have a question or a comment, to email us at radio@firehouse.com. And if you have a specific topic that you would like to have discussed. And, you know, one of the things we would like to do is, with our folks that have questions or comments, is to bring them on to the show and begin this discussion process, you know, amongst our fire service individuals across the United States, and create some diversity in what we're doing with this podcast. So I encourage you, if you have a question or a comment, to email in, and we'll get you on the show to talk about your question and comment and participate. I think that you might bring a lot of value to our other listeners that are out there. Again, our goal with Training and Tactics Talk is to provide quality training and education on training and tactics and enhance the skills of our firefighters and our fire officers on the street. And we want to make sure that everyone goes home. Again, thanks for tuning in and stay safe.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.